you know, scammers really work well by operating on our emotions. So if you're seeing content online and having a strong emotional reaction to it that is coupled with a request for money or information, that should be a major red flag.
That's Gabrielle Bluestone, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Gabrielle Bluestone is a journalist and licensed attorney from New York, whose writing has appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, New York Observer, Sunday Times Magazine, and Esquire, among other publications. She is the Emmy-nominated producer of Netflix's documentary Fire, and associate producer of Different Flowers, winner of the 2017 Kansas City Film Fest Festival Prize. She joins us to talk about hype, how scammers, grifters, and con artists are taking over the internet, and why we're following. Gabrielle, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, before we talk about some of the specifics in this book, give us an overview. What are readers going to find here?
Well, this book started with the Fire Festival. I was the reporter who broke that story for Vice. And while I was reporting it out, I started to realize that what the most interesting thing about that whole saga wasn't necessarily what Fire Festival CEO Billy McFarland had gotten away with, but rather why his scams worked so well and what it said about our society and our culture that we really kind of, as consumers, enabled something like that to happen. And so in reporting this out, I really realize that there is really no element of our life that is untouched by hype and marketing, and we're really unaware of the way that these forces are working.
Well, as you know, scammers have been around forever, but you write that today's social media makes it possible for them to reach new levels of deception.
Yes, it was not what I expected. I thought, you know, given how many tools we have available literally at our fingertips to uncover scammers and bad actors, that we would be more enabled than ever before to really stop someone in their tracks long before they were able to get our credit card information. But what this really revealed to me was that social media and the way that we are using it and the way that we're participating in it has really almost primed us to be scammed more than ever before.
Well, one of the reasons, and I'd like you to elaborate on this, is that it seems like through social media, and this was very much evident with the Fire Festival, that we can receive confirmation that this is real and not a scam from so many different areas that we just buy it. We don't further examine it ourselves.
Yeah, there are a lot of kind of heuristics available to us that are easy for scammers to fake that we don't think about too much, right? So if something has, you know, good reviews or a lot of likes or the right influencer marketing it, that is often enough for our brains to tell us, okay, this looks good, that we don't really think that we need to investigate it anymore. One of the most shocking things about reporting on the Fire Festival to me was that you didn't have to be an investigative reporter to see that something was really wrong with it. You just had to get off of Instagram and actually look into the company itself. And, you know, a mere 5 minutes of Googling would have turned up tremendous red flags about this festival. But the problem was most people never left Instagram. They saw the ad on the app and then they purchased tickets through a direct link. There was never any need for them to research it.
So when did you first suspect that the Fire Festival was a scam?
At that moment of curiosity, when I started to wonder, what is this thing? Just like everyone else, I saw the ads for it on social media and assumed that it was just, you know, another fancy music festival, a Coachella kind of thing. And I didn't really think too much else about it. And then I saw someone that I knew personally who had tickets to the festival and who was talking about all the outrageous perks that were coming along with those tickets on their social media page. And that was when I had that feeling of FOMO, you know, the fear of missing out, where I thought, oh my gosh, is this the party of the year? Did I not know? So I Googled it. I started looking up what it was. And just, you know, it immediately felt wrong. This was a festival that was being advertised by some of the wealthiest and most followed people on social media, like Hailey Bieber and Kendall Jenner, you know, these like big name advertisers. But when you went to their website, it really looked like it had been, you know, designed by a high school coding student. They were promising all of these outrageous luxuries, you know, villas on the beach and yacht packages with private chefs on board. But when you tried to look at what the actual packages were, they didn't even have photographs. They had sketches. It was like artist renderings of what it might look like. And so alarm bells started going off fairly quickly. And, you know, once I got curious, there were multiple people involved in the festival who were concerned that it looked like a fraud and were trying to warn people. There was a website that was being run by a man with land in the Bahamas who was concerned by what he was seeing. There was a Twitter account that was warning people run by Calvin Wells, who appeared in both Fyre Festival documentaries. And he just wanted people to investigate for themselves, but he couldn't get any response. It was kind of wild how many Cassandras there were in this story.
And even for you, once you became suspicious of this, it took a while to convince your bosses that there was really a story here.
Yeah. It sounded to them kind of just like a silly social media story. You know, I'll never forget. They said, a music festival, that's overhyped. I don't know if that's really a Vice story, especially because at the time, Vice was very focused on, you know, hard-hitting international news, which this story actually kind of fell into that category. And so I've often wondered if I failed to describe it correctly, or, and I think this is more likely the case, that we have been so conditioned to accept that the marketing is so rarely going to reflect the reality that it didn't even seem like a blip on the radar until it started to explode on social media.
What do you think that this festival and others' scams that you've examined have to say about human nature? Because one of the things that fascinated me, and obviously you as well, is even when people were told that this was a scam and people saw that it was falling apart right in front of their eyes, they still went.
Yeah. You know, I write about kind of, a lot of it is human nature, right? You know, the Solomon Asch experiment from the 1950s revealed kind of just how susceptible we are to peer pressure. And I don't think anything has changed since. You know, in the famous experiment, he put people in a room, showed them two straight lines, and asked them to pick a third line that most closely matched the first two. Obviously, there were plants in the audience who had been instructed to pick the most obviously incorrect answer. And up to 75% of the participants went along with it. You know, such as the force of peer pressure and our desire to fit in and to go with the flow. The people that advertised this festival had hundreds of millions of combined followers. They lived the most aspirational lifestyles. And so their fans, I think, on a psychological level, you know, wanted to believe them. And that's the other thing. They wanted to believe that this was true. We all know if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. But we also all want to be the exception to that rule. And our brains, you know, kind of work overtime to convince us that this thing really could work because we want it so badly.
This Fyre Festival is a narrative thread that goes throughout the book. But you also look at other scams and different sort of levels of deception that are taking place, including Theranos, Juicero, and others. Tell us a bit about those.
Yeah. So what I thought was so interesting about this story and what it revealed about our culture, you know, a lot of people that I spoke to who knew Billy McFarland really questioned whether he was really a scammer or just, you know, someone with big ideas who got in over his head. And that kind of wording and that way of looking at it, I noticed is often used in Silicon Valley and in the startup world, where people are often creating, you know, raising millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars or billions, around an idea that they don't even know for sure whether they can execute or not. And that is just like the way things go, right? So Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos was able to create a company and raise billions of dollars around a blood test that never existed. And it wasn't really a huge loss for the people investing in her because the VCs are making a percentage on the money that they're investing either way. And because the strength of a company really in today's culture isn't based on what the product is or how much money they're making. It's based on how much people are willing to give them, right? And that's kind of when you look at a company like Uber that has never turned a profit, that, you know, made rule breaking into like the DNA of the way they operate, I can understand why people would look at Billy McFarland and be like, well, maybe he didn't really do anything wrong, because that industry is set up that way. And so the fact that Juicero, like you mentioned, which was a famous juicing machine that was launched in response to this wellness craze, it turned out that it would have been easier to just make the juice with your hands. And that company had raised hundreds of millions of dollars. So it seemed like there was a lot of kind of stupid money flying around. And there were other parallels as well, you know, sorry to jump from topic to topic, but, you know, Fyre Festival had influencers. And I think it works the same way with these companies. You get one big name investor or one, you know, Henry Kissinger on your board. And I think that people, even people who are professionally wealthy, stop doing due diligence. It's enough for them to know that, oh, the Walton family has put money into this. Okay, so will I.
So the question I have for you is, given what you've described and sort of the environment that we live in right now with all the social media and different ways we get information, how can people protect themselves from scams, detect them in the first place so that they can avoid getting involved with them?
You know, scammers really work well by operating on our emotions. So if you're seeing content online and having a strong emotional reaction to it that is coupled with a request for money or information, that should be a major red flag. And that emotion could be anything from fear of missing out or jealousy or loneliness. But there is that, or sympathy. You know, there's been a rise in animal shelter scams as we've been living this last year online, where companies or individuals will pretend to have, you know, animals that need assistance. They'll post photos. And it's very easy to, as a consumer, to try and verify some of these things rather than just donate money. You know, stop and look them up, right? If it's a shelter or a charity, they're required to have certain registrations that you can look up. It's very easy now to right click on a photo and search Google for it and see if it's been used before, or if they're the first to post it. You know, there are ways to investigate it, ways that people could have investigated the Fyre Festival that, you know, are available to us that we are just skipping for some reason. And then question what you really know about something. Are you interested in purchasing a product or buying Bitcoin or, you know, buying GameStop stock because you think it's a good investment and because you're interested in purchasing that? Or is it because, you know, everyone else is doing it? I think it really is helpful to question your motivations, because that will stop these things in their tracks a lot of the time.
So tell us about what happened to Billy McFarland in the aftermath of the Fyre Festival scam.
Well, an interesting kind of conundrum that I've noticed is that scam artists really tend to fail upwards. They are the only criminals who don't get, you know, quote unquote, canceled. And I think part of that is because that kind of crime requires such confidence and charisma that it's almost like human nature to kind of admire that ability to pull something like that off. Billy McFarland did get sentenced to prison. He has served 3 years of a 6-year sentence, and it has not been an easy ride for him behind bars. He was initially sent to FCI Otisville, which is a prison in upstate New York. It's kind of like a celebrity white collar prison, so he spent time there at the same time as Mike the Situation Sorrentino from Jersey Shore, and I believe he crossed paths with Donald Trump's former fixer Michael Cohen. Unfortunately, he got busted with a recording device that he had snuck into his cell. I think they found it taped inside a cereal box in his locker, which was a major violation. And he was placed in solitary confinement for several months and then transferred to a facility in Ohio. And he was put back into solitary in Ohio after launching a podcast from prison. So he certainly not had a boring time of it, but it's, you know, not the private jet yacht life that he had become so accustomed to in the months leading up to his imprisonment. But I don't think that that's the last that we'll see of him. He has been, you know, threatening to write a memoir that he wants to call Prometheus, God of Fyre. He has all these other projects that he, you know, will raise on his Instagram occasionally. He is still communicating with the public. And, you know, there's two scripted series in production right now, I believe, about the Fyre Festival. There's a book, there's two documentaries. I think that he is kind of like a cult pop culture figure now and always will be. And that's something I find really fascinating, right? Like there, Elizabeth Holmes is going to be played by Jennifer Lawrence, and Anna Delvey is, you know, there's a Shonda Rhimes show about her coming out. For some reason, scammers are really revered in our culture, and I don't think they're going anywhere.
Well, there's a lot in this book we didn't have time to cover, but what do you hope readers will ultimately take away from it?
I hope that readers will look at kind of the way that we as a society have tacitly allowed hype and marketing to stand in for the real thing and to really question how much of the things that we value are worth the value that we're assigning to them, and really start to think cynically and critically about that.
The book is Hype: How Scammers, Grifters, and Con Artists Are Taking Over the Internet and Why We're Following. It's by Gabrielle Bluestone. Gabrielle, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a pleasure.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.